This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Chase, written by L. Kennedy, performed by C.J. Bloom and Jacob Morgan.
One. Summer. Is this a joke? I gape at the five girls who are holding me in judgment. They have various hair, skin, and eye colors, and yet I can't tell them apart because their expressions are identical. There's a whole lot of smug peeking through the phony remorse they're trying to convey, as if they're truly devastated by the news. Ha! They're enjoying this. I'm sorry, Summer, but it's not a joke. Kaya offers a pitying smile. As the standards committee, we take Kappa Beta News' reputation very seriously. We received word from Nationals this morning. Oh, really? You received word? Did they send a telegram? No, it was an email, she said, completely missing the sarcasm. She flips her glossy hair over one shoulder. They reminded the committee that every member of this sorority must uphold the behavior standards set by them. Otherwise, our chapter will lose its good standing with Nationals. We have to remain in good standing, Bianca pipes up, pleading at me with her eyes. Of the five biatches in front of me, she seems like the most reasonable. Especially after what happened to Daphne Kettleman, adds a girl whose name I can't remember. Curiosity gets the better of me. What happened to Daphne Kettleman?
Alcohol poisoning.
The fourth girl, I think her name's Haley, lowers her voice to a whisper and quickly glances around, as if there might be a bug or two hidden in the antique furnishings that fill the living room of the Kappa Mansion.
She had to get her stomach pumped,
the no-name girl reveals gleefully, which makes me question whether she's actually thrilled that Daphne Kettleman almost died. Kaya speaks up in a curt voice.
Enough about Daphne! You shouldn't have brought her up, Coral!
Coral!
Right, that's her name. And it sounds as stupid now as it did when she introduced herself 15 minutes ago.
We don't speak Daphne's name in this house, Kaya explains to me.
Jesus! One measly stomach pumping and poor Daphne gets Voldemorted? The Kappa Beta Nu chapter of Briar University is evidently a lot stricter than the Brown chapter. Case in point, they're kicking me out before I'd even moved in.
This isn't personal, Kaya continues, giving me another fake consolatory smile. Our reputation is very important to us, and although you're a legacy, a presidential legacy, I point out. So, ha, in your face, Kaya. My mom was president of a Kappa chapter during her junior and senior years, and so was my grandmother. Hayward women and Kappa Beta Nu go together like abs and any male Hemsworth.
A legacy, she repeats. But we don't adhere as strictly to those ancestral bonds the way we used to.
Ancestral bonds? Who says that? Did she time travel from the olden days?
As I said, we have rules and policies, and you didn't leave the Brown chapter on the best of terms.
I didn't get kicked out of Kappa, I argue. I got kicked out of school in general.
Kaya stares at me in disbelief.
Is that a point of pride for you? Getting expelled from one of the best colleges in the country?
I answer through clenched teeth.
No, I'm not proud of it. I'm just saying, technically speaking, I'm still a member of this sorority.
Maybe so, but that doesn't mean you're entitled to live in this house.
Kaya crosses her arms over the front of her white mohair sweater.
I see. I mimic her pose, except I cross my legs, too.
Kaya's envious gaze lands on my black suede Prada boots, a gift from my grandmother to celebrate my admission to Briar. I had a good chuckle when I opened the package last night. I'm not sure Nana Celeste understands that I'm only attending Briar because I was expelled from my other school. Actually,
I bet she does, and just doesn't care. Nana will find any excuse to get her Prada on. She's my soulmate.
And you didn't think, I go on, an edge creeping into my voice, to let me know this until after I packed up my stuff, drove all the way down here from Manhattan, and walked through the front door?
Bianca is the only one who has the decency to look guilty. We're really sorry, Summer, but like Kaya said, Nationals didn't get in touch until this morning, and then we had to vote, and... She shrugs weakly. Sorry, she says again. So you voted and decided I'm not allowed to live here?
Yes,
Kaya says. I glance at the others. Haley?
Hallie,
she corrects icily. Oh, whatever. Like I'm supposed to remember their names? We literally just met. Hallie, I look to the next girl. Coral, and then the next girl. Crap, I legit don't know this one.
Laura?
Tawny! She bites out. Swing and a miss. Tawny, I repeat apologetically. You guys are sure about this? I get three nods. Cool. Thanks for wasting my time. I stand up, push my hair over one shoulder, and start wrapping my red cashmere scarf around my neck. A bit too vigorously, maybe, because it seems to annoy Kaya.
Stop being so dramatic, she orders in a snarky voice, and don't act like we're to blame for the fact that you burned down your former house. Excuse us if we don't want to live with an arsonist.
I struggle to keep my temper in check. I didn't burn anything down.
That's not what our brown sisters said.
She tightens her lips.
Anyway, we have a house meeting in 10 minutes. It's time for you to go.
Another meeting? Look at you! A packed schedule today!
We're organizing a New Year's Eve charity event tonight to raise money,
Kaya says stiffly. Ah, my bad. What's the charity?
Oh, Bianca looks sheepish. We're raising money to renovate the basement here in the mansion.
Oh my god. They're the charity? You better get to it then. With a mocking smile, I flutter my fingers in a careless wave and march out of the room. In the hall, I feel the first sting of tears. Fuck these girls. I don't need them or their dumb sorority.
Summer, wait.
Bianca catches up to me at the front doors. I quickly paste on a smile and blink away the tears that had begun to well up. I won't let them see me cry. And I'm so friggin' glad I left all my suitcases in the car and only came in with my oversized purse. How mortifying would it have been to lug my bags back to the car? It would have taken multiple trips, too, because I don't travel light.
Listen, Bianca says, her voice so quiet I strain to hear her. You should consider yourself lucky.
I raise my eyebrows. For being homeless?
Sure, I feel blessed.
She cracks a smile.
Your last name is Hayward De Laurentiis. You are not and will never be homeless.
I grin sheepishly. Can't argue with that.
But I'm serious, she whispers. You don't want to live here.
Her almond-shaped eyes dart toward the doorway.
Kaya is like a drill sergeant. It's her first year as Kappa president, and she's on some crazy power trip.
I've noticed, I say dryly.
You should have seen what she did to Daphne. She acted like it was the alcohol thing, but really she was just jealous because Daph slept with her ex-boyfriend Chris, so she made Daph's life miserable. One weekend when Daphne was away, Kaya accidentally, Bianca uses air quotes, donated every piece of her clothing to these freshmen who are collecting stuff for the annual clothes drive. Daph eventually quit the sorority and moved out.
I'm starting to think that alcohol poisoning was the best thing that could have ever happened to Daphne Kettleman. If it got her out of this hellhole. Whatever. I don't care if I live here or not. Like you said, I'll be just fine. I put on the cavalier, nothing in life ever, ever gets to me voice that I've perfected over the years. It's my armor. I pretend that my life is a beautiful Victorian house and hope that nobody peers close enough to see the cracks in my facade. But no matter how convincing I am in front of Bianca, there's no stopping the massive wave of anxiety that hits me the moment I slide into my car 5 minutes later. It stilts my breathing and quickens my pulse, making it hard to think clearly. What am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go? I inhale deeply. It's okay. It's fine. I take another breath. Yes, I'll figure it out. I always do, right? I'm constantly screwing up, and I always find a way to unscrew myself. I just have to buckle down and think. My phone blares out its ringtone rendition of Sia's Cheap Thrills. Thank God. I waste no time answering the call. Hey, I greet my brother Dean, grateful for the interruption.
Hey, boogers. Just checking that you made it to campus in one piece.
Why wouldn't I?
Gosh, who knows? You might have run off to Miami with some hitchhiking wannabe rapper you picked up on the interstate. Or what I like to call a recipe for becoming a serial killer's skin suit.
Oh, wait. You already fucking did that. Oh, my God. First of all, Jasper was an aspiring country singer, not a rapper. Second, I was with two other girls and we were driving to Daytona Beach, not Miami. Third, he didn't even try to touch me, let alone murder me. I sigh. Lacey did hook up with him, though, and he gave her herpes. Incredulous silence meets my ears. Dickie? That's my childhood name for Dean. He hates it. You there?
I'm trying to understand how you think your version of the story is in any way more palatable than mine.
He suddenly curses.
Ah, fuck. Didn't I hook up with Lacey at your 18th birthday party?
A pause.
The herpes trip would have happened before that party. Damn it, Summer. I mean, I used protection, but a warning would have been nice.
No, you didn't hook up with Lacey. You're thinking of Lainey with an N. I stopped being her friend after that.
How come?
Because she slept with my brother when she was supposed to be hanging out with me at my party. That's not cool.
Truth. Selfish move.
Yep. There's a sudden blast of noise on the line. What sounds like wind, car engines, and then a barrage of honking.
Sorry, Dean says. Just leaving the apartment. My Uber's here.
Where are you off to?
Picking up our dry cleaning. The place Allie and I go to is in Tribeca, but they're awesome, so worth the trek. Highly recommend.
Dean and his girlfriend Allie live in the West Village in Manhattan. Allie admitted to me that the area is way fancier than she's used to. But for my brother, it's actually a step down. Our family's penthouse is on the Upper East Side, making up the top three floors of our hotel, the Hayward Plaza. But Dean's new building is near the private school where he teaches, and since Allie has a lead role on a television show that shoots all over Manhattan, the location is convenient for both of them. It must be so nice for them, having a place to live and all.
Anyway, are you nice and settled at the Kappa House?
Not quite, I confess.
For fuck's sake, Summer. What did you do?
My jaw falls open in outrage. Why does my family always assume that I'm in the wrong?
I didn't do anything,
I answer stiffly, but then defeat weakens my voice. They don't think someone like me is good for the sorority's reputation. One of them said I was an arsonist.
Well, Dean says not so tactfully, you kind of are. Fuck off, Dickie. It was an accident. Arsonists intentionally set fires. So you're an accidental arsonist. The accidental arsonist. That's a great name for a book.
Awesome. Go write that. I don't care how snide I sound. I'm feeling snarky and my nerves are shot. Anyway, they kicked me out and now I have to figure out where the heck I'm going to live this semester. My throat catches on a lump that appears out of nowhere, and a choked, almost sob squeezes past it.
Are you okay? Dean asks immediately.
I don't know. I swallow hard. This is ridiculous. I don't know why I'm upset. Those girls are awful, and I wouldn't have enjoyed living with them. I mean, it's New Year's Eve, and they're all on campus. They're doing some charity fundraiser thing instead of partying. That's so not my scene.
The tears I've been holding at bay are no longer controllable. Two fat drops slide down my cheeks, and I'm so glad Dean isn't here to witness it. It's bad enough that he can hear me crying. I'm sorry, boogers. Whatever. I angrily swipe at my wet eyes. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to cry over a few mean girls and an overcrowded house. I won't let it get to me. Would Selena Gomez let it get to her? Absolutely not. There's a confused beat. Selena Gomez? Yes, I jut out my chin. She's a symbol of class and purity. And I try to model myself after her, personality-wise. Obviously, when it comes to style, I will forever strive to be Coco Chanel. And I will forever fail because nobody can be Coco Chanel. Obviously. He pauses. Which era, Selena Gomez, are we talking about? Justin Bieber or The Weeknd? Or Bieber Part 2? I frown at my phone. Are you for real right now? What? A woman isn't defined by her boyfriends. She's defined by her achievements. And her shoes. My gaze lands on my new boots, courtesy of Nana Celeste. At least I've had smashing success in the shoe department. The rest of it? Not so much. I guess I can ask Dad to call the housing people and see if there's availability in any of the dorms. Once again, I feel defeated. I really don't want to do that, though. He already had to pull strings to get me into Briar. And I'd rather not live in a dorm if I can help it. Sharing a bathroom with a dozen other girls is my worst nightmare. I had to do it in the Kappa house at Brown, but the private bedroom made the bathroom situation easier to swallow. No way will there be any singles left in the dorms this far into the school year. I moan softly. What am I supposed to do? I have two older brothers who never, ever pass up an opportunity to tease or embarrass me. But sometimes they display rare moments of compassion. Don't call Dad yet, Dean says gruffly. Let me see what I can do first. My forehead wrinkles. I'm not sure you can do anything. Just hold off on calling him. I've got an idea. The squeal of brakes fills the line. One sec. Thanks, bro. 5-star ride for sure. A car door slams. Summer, you're coming back to the city tonight anyway, right? I wasn't planning on it, I admit. But I guess I don't have a choice now. I'll have to grab a hotel in Boston until I figure out my living arrangements. Not Boston, I meant New York. The semester doesn't start for a few weeks. I figured you'd be staying at the penthouse until then. No, I wanted to unpack and settle in and all that crap. Well, it ain't happening today, and tonight is New Year's Eve. So you might as well come home and celebrate with me and Allie. A bunch of my old teammates are driving up, too. Like who? I ask curiously. Garrett's in the city for a game, so he'll be here, and the current Briar Brigade is coming. You know some of them. Mike Hollis, Hunter Davenport. Actually, Hunter went to Roselawn Prep. Think he was a year behind you? Pierre and Corson, but I don't think you've ever met them. Fitzy. My heartbeat stutters. I remember Fitzy, I say as casually as I'm capable of, which is not casual at all. Even I can hear the excitement in my voice. Who can blame me, though? Fitzy is short for Colin Fitzgerald, and he just happens to be the unicorn. The tall, sexy, tattooed, hockey-playing unicorn of a man who I might have a teeny-weeny itsy-bitsy crush on. Okay, fine. A big motherfucking crush on. He's so magical, but he's also out of reach. Dean's hockey friends are usually all over me when they meet me, but not Fitz. I met him last year when I visited Dean at Briar, and the guy barely glanced my way. When I saw him again at a birthday party for Dean's friend Logan, he said about 10 words to me, and I'm pretty sure half those words were hello, how are you, and goodbye. He's exasperating. Not that I expect every male in my vicinity to fall at my feet, but I know he's attracted to me. I've noticed the way his brown eyes smolder when he looks at me. They frigging smolder. Unless I'm just seeing what I want to see. My dad has this super pompous saying, perception and reality are vastly disparate. The truth is usually found somewhere in between. Dad used that line in his closing arguments for a murder trial once, and now he busts it out any time it's even remotely applicable to a situation. If the truth lies somewhere between Colin Fitzgerald's outward aloofness toward me, he hates me, and the heat I see in his eyes, his fiery passion for me, then, I guess, split the difference and say he views me as a friend? I purse my lips. No, absolutely not. I refuse to be friend-zoned before I've even made a move. It'll be a good time, Dean is saying. Besides, it's been ages since we were in the same place on New Year's Eve. So get your butt to New York and text when you're here. I'm at the dry cleaners now. Gotta go. Love you. He hangs up, and I'm smiling so broadly it's hard to imagine I was in tears 5 minutes ago. Dean might be a pain in the ass most of the time, but he's a good big brother. He's there for me when I need him, and that's all that really matters. And, praise the Lord, now I have a party to go to. There's nothing better than a party after a shitty day. I need this badly. I check the time. It's 1 p.m. I quickly do some mental math. The Briar campus is about an hour away from Boston. From there, it's a 3.5, 4-hour drive to Manhattan. That means I won't arrive in the city until the evening, which won't leave me much time to get ready. If I'm seeing my unicorn tonight, I plan on dolling myself up from my head down to my toes. That boy isn't going to know what hit him.
2. Fitz. Dance with me? I want to say no, but I also want to say yes. I call this the summer dilemma, the frustrating polar reactions this green-eyed, golden-haired goddess sparks in me. Fuck yes and hell no. Get naked with her. Run far, far away from her. Thanks, but I don't like to dance. I'm not lying. Dancing's the worst. Besides, when it comes to Summer De Laurentiis, my flight instinct always wins out.
You're no fun, Fitzy.
She makes a tisking noise, drawing my gaze to her lips, full pink and glossy, with a tiny mole above the left side of her mouth. It's an extremely hot mouth. Hell, everything about Summer is hot. She's hands down the best-looking girl in the bar, and every dude in our vicinity is either staring enviously or glowering at me for being with her. Not that I'm with her. We're not together. I'm just standing next to her, with 2 feet of space between us, which Summer keeps trying to bridge by leaning closer to me. In her defense, she practically has to scream in my ear for me to hear her over the electronic dance music blasting through the room. I hate EDM, and I don't like these kinds of bars, the ones with a dance floor and deafening music. Why the subterfuge? Just call your establishment a nightclub if that's what you want it to be. The owner of Gunner's Pub should have called this place Gunner's Club. Then I could have turned right around when I saw the sign and spared myself the shattered eardrums. Not for the first time tonight, I curse my friends for dragging me to Brooklyn for New Year's Eve. I'd way rather be at home drinking a beer or two and watching the ball drop on TV. I'm low-key like that.
You know, they warned me you were a curmudgeon, but I didn't believe it until now.
Who's they? I ask suspiciously. And hey, wait, I'm not a curmudgeon.
You're right. The term is kind of dated. Let's go with Groucho.
Let's not.
No fun, police? Is that better?
Her expression is pure innocence.
Seriously, Fitz, what do you have against fun?
An unwitting smile breaks free. Got nothing against fun.
All right, then what do you have against me?
She challenges.
Because every time I try talking to you, you run away.
My smile fades. I shouldn't be surprised that she's calling me out in public. We've had a whopping total of 2 encounters, but that's plenty of time for me to know she's the type who thrives on drama. I hate drama. Got nothing against you either. With a shrug, I ease away from the bar, prepared to do what she's just accused me of. Run. A frustrated gleam fills her eyes. They're big and green, the same shade as her older brother Dean's eyes. And Dean's the reason I force myself to stay put. He's a good friend of mine. I can't be a jackass to his sister, both out of respect for him and for fear of my well-being. I've been on the ice when Dean's gloves come off. He's got a mean right hook. I mean it, I say roughly. I have nothing against you. We're cool.
What? I didn't hear the last part,
she says over the music. I dip my mouth toward her ear, and I'm surprised that I barely have to bend my neck. She's taller than the average chick, 5'9 or 10, and since I'm 6'2 and used to towering over women, I find this refreshing. I said we're cool, I repeat, but I misjudged the distance between my lips and Summer's ear. The two collide and I feel a shiver run up her frame. I shiver too because my mouth is way too close to hers. She smells like heaven, some fascinating combo of flowers and jasmine and vanilla and sandalwood, maybe? A man could get high on that fragrance. And don't get me started on her dress. White, strapless, short. So short it barely grazes her lower thighs. God fucking help me. I quickly straighten up before I do something stupid like kiss her. Instead, I take a huge gulp of my beer. Only it goes down the wrong pipe and I start coughing like it's the 18th century and I'm a tuberculosis patient. Smooth move.
You okay?
When the coughing fit subsides, I find those green eyes dancing at me. Her lips are curved in a devilish smile. She knows exactly what got me flustered. Fine, I croak, just as three very plastered guys lumber up to the bar and bump into Summer. She stumbles, and the next thing I know, there's a gorgeous, sweet-smelling woman in my arms. She laughs and grabs my hand.
Come on, let's get out of this crowd before it leaves bruises.
For some reason, I let her lead me away. We end up at a high table near the railing that separates the bar's main room from the small, shitty dance floor. A quick look around reveals that most of my friends are drunk off their asses. Mike Hollis, my roommate, is grinding up on a cute brunette who doesn't seem to mind in the slightest. He's the one who insisted we make the drive to Brooklyn instead of staying in the Boston area. He wanted to spend New Year's with his older brother Brody, who disappeared the moment we got here. I guess the girl is Hollis's consolation prize for getting ditched by his brother. Our other roommate, Hunter, is dancing with three girls. Yep, three. They're all but licking his face off, and I'm pretty sure one has a hand down his pants. Hunter, of course, is loving it. What a difference a year makes. Last season, he was uneasy about all the female attention, said it made him feel a bit sleazy. Now it appears he's perfectly cool taking advantage of the perks that come with playing hockey for Breyer University. And trust me, there are plenty of perks. Let's get real. Athletes are the most fuckable guys on most college campuses. If you're at a football school, chances are there's a line of jersey chasers begging to blow the quarterback. Basketball school? The groupie pool doubles and triples in size when March Madness comes around. And at Breyer, with a hockey team that has a dozen Frozen Four championships under its belt and more nationally televised games than any other college in the country, the hockey players are gods. Except for me, that is. I play hockey. Yes, I'm good at it, definitely. But God and jock and superstar are terms I've never been comfortable with. Deep down, I'm a huge nerd. A nerd masquerading as a god.
Hunter's got game.
Summer is studying Hunter's entourage. The DJ has switched the beats from electronic garbage to top 40 hits. Blessedly, he's also turned down the volume, probably in anticipation of the nearing countdown. 30 more minutes and I can make my escape. He does. I agree.
I'm impressed.
Yeah?
Definitely. Greenwich boys are usually secret prudes.
I wonder how she knows Hunter is from Connecticut. I don't think I've seen them exchange more than a few words tonight. Maybe Dean told her. Or maybe it doesn't frickin' matter how she knows, because if it did matter, then that means the weird prickly sensation in my chest is jealousy. And that, frankly, is unacceptable. Summer does another visual sweep of the crowd and blanches.
Oh my god, gross!
She cups her hands to create a microphone, shouting,
Keep your tongue in your own mouth, Dickie!
Laughter sputters out of me. No way Dean could have heard her, but I guess he possesses some sort of sibling radar, because he abruptly pries his lips off his girlfriend's. His head swivels in our direction. When he spots Summer, he gives her the finger. She blows a kiss in return. I'm so glad I'm an only child, I remark. She grins at me.
Nah, you're missing out. Tormenting my brothers is one of my favorite pastimes.
I've noticed. She calls Dean Dickie, a childhood nickname that a nicer person would have stopped using years ago. On the other hand, Dean's nickname for Summer is Boogers, so maybe she's right to torture him.
Dickie deserves to be tormented tonight. I can't believe we're partying in Brooklyn, she grumbles. When he said we were ringing in the new year in the city, I assumed he meant Manhattan, but then he and Allie dragged me to horrible Brooklyn instead. I feel duped.
I snicker. What's wrong with Brooklyn? Allie's dad lives around here, doesn't he? Summer nods.
They're spending the day with him tomorrow, and to answer your question, what isn't wrong with Brooklyn? It used to be cool before it got overrun by hipsters.
Hipsters still exist? I thought we were done with that nonsense.
God, no, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
She mock shudders.
This whole area is still teeming with them.
She says them as if they're carriers for a gruesome, incurable disease. She might have a point, though. A thorough examination of the crowd reveals a large amount of vintage attire, painfully skinny jeans on men, retro accessories paired with shiny new tech, and lots of beards. I rub my own beard, wondering if it places me in the hipster camp. I've been rocking the scruff all winter, mostly because it's good insulation from the bitter weather we've been experiencing. Last week we got hit by one of the worst nor'easters I've ever seen. I almost froze my balls off.
They're so... She searches for the right word. Douchey.
I have to laugh.
Not all of them. Most of them, she says. Like, see that girl over there with the braids and the bangs? That's $1,000 Prada cardigan she has on. And she's paired it with a $5 tank she probably got at the Salvation Army. And those weird tasseled shoes they sell in Chinatown. She's a total fraud.
I furrow my brow.
How do you know the cardigan cost a grand? Because I have the same one in gray. Besides, I can pick Prada out of any lineup.
I don't doubt that. She was probably deposited into a designer onesie the moment she popped out of her mother's womb. Summer and Dean come from a filthy rich family. Their parents are successful lawyers who were independently wealthy before they got hitched. So now they're like a mega-rich super duo who could probably buy a small country without even making a dent in their bank account. I stayed at their Manhattan penthouse a couple times, and it was goddamn unreal. They also have a mansion in Greenwich, a beach house, and a bunch of other properties around the globe. Me, I can barely make the rent on the townhouse I share with two other dudes. We're still on the hunt for a fourth roommate, though, so my share will go down once we fill that empty room. I'm not gonna lie, the fact that Summer lives in penthouses and owns clothes that cost thousands of dollars is slightly unsettling.
Anyway, hipsters suck, Fitzy. No thank you. I'd way rather... Ooh, I love this song. I had backstage passes to her show at the Garden last June, and it was amazing.
The ADHD is strong with this one, my friend. I hide a smile as Summer completely drops her death to all hipsters tirade and starts bobbing her head to a Beyonce song. Her high ponytail swishes wildly.
Are you sure you don't want to dance?
She pleads. Positive.
You're the worst. I'll be right back.
I blink, and she's no longer beside me. Blink again, and I spot her on the dance floor, arms thrust in the air, ponytail flipping, hips moving to the beat. I'm not the only one watching her. A sea of covetous eyes ripples in the direction of the beautiful girl in the white dress. Summer either doesn't notice or doesn't care. She dances alone without an ounce of self-consciousness. She is completely comfortable in her own skin.
Jesus!
Hunter Davenport rasps, coming up to the table. Like most of the men around us, he's staring at Summer with an expression that could only be described as pure hunger.
Guess she hasn't forgotten any of those old cheerleading moves.
Hunter slants another appreciative look in Summer's direction. When he notices my quizzical face, he adds,
She was a cheerleader in high school, member of the dance team, too.
When did he and Summer engage in a conversation long enough for him to learn these tidbits? The uncomfortable prickling sensation returns, this time traveling up my spine. It's not jealousy, though.
Cheerleading and dance, huh?
I ask lightly.
She tell you that?
We went to the same prep school, he reveals.
No shit.
Yeah, I was a year behind her, but trust me, every hetero guy with a working dick was familiar with Summer De Laurentiis's cheer routines.
I'll bet. He claps me on the shoulder. Gonna hit the head and then grab another drink. Want anything? I'm good. Not sure why, but I'm relieved that Hunter's not around when Summer returns to the table, her cheeks flushed from exertion. Despite the frigid temperatures outside, she chose not to wear tights or pantyhose, and as my old man would say, she's got legs for days. Long, smooth, gorgeous legs that would probably look so hot wrapped around my waist, and the white dress sets off her deep golden tan, giving her a glowing, healthy vibe that's almost hypnotizing. So I clear my throat. You're coming to Briar this semester, huh? I ask, trying to distract myself from her smoking body. She gives an enthusiastic nod.
I am.
Are you going to miss Providence? I know she spent her freshman and sophomore years at Brown, plus one semester of junior year, which makes up half her college career. If it were me, I'd hate starting over at a new school. But Summer shakes her head.
Not really. I wasn't a fan of the town or the school. I only went there because my parents wanted me to attend an Ivy League, and I didn't get into Harvard or Yale, their alma maters.
She shrugs.
Did you want to go to Briar?
Definitely. I heard phenomenal things about the fine arts program, and obviously the hockey program is stellar. They offered me a full ride to play, and I get to study something I'm really into, so I offer a shrug in return.
That's so important, doing what you love, I mean. A lot of people don't have that opportunity.
Curiosity flickers through me. What do you love to do? Her answering grin is self-deprecating.
I'll let you know when I figure it out.
Come on, there's got to be something you're passionate about.
Well, I've been passionate about stuff. Interior design, psychology, ballet, swimming. The problem is it never sticks. I lose interest quickly. I haven't found a long-term passion yet, I suppose.
Her candidness surprises me a bit. She seems way more down-to-earth tonight compared to our previous encounters.
I'm thirsty,
she announces. I suppress the urge to roll my eyes, since I'm sure that's code for go buy me a drink. Only it's not. With a naughty smile, she swipes my beer from my hand. Our fingers brush briefly, and I pretend not to notice the spark of heat that races up my arm. I watch as she wraps her fingers around the Bud Light bottle and takes a long sip. She's got small hands, delicate fingers. It'd be a challenge to draw them, to capture the intriguing combination of fragility and surety. Her fingernails are short, rounded, and have those white French tips or whatever you call them, a style that seems way too plain for someone like Summer. I'd expect extra-long talons painted pink or some other pastel.
You're doing it again.
There's accusation in her tone, a bit of aggravation, too. Doing what?
Zoning me out. Curmudgeoning.
That's not a word.
Says who?
She takes another sip of beer. My gaze instantly fixes on her lips. Damn it, I gotta stop this. She's not my type. The first time I met her, everything about her screamed sorority girl. The designer clothes, the waves and waves of blonde hair, a face that could stop traffic. There's no way I'm her type either. I have no idea why she's spending New Year's Eve talking to a scruffy, tatted-up goon like me. Sorry, I'm not very chatty. Don't take it personally, okay? I steal my bottle back.
Okay, I won't. But if you don't feel like talking, at least entertain me in other ways.
She plants her hands on her hips.
I propose we make out.
3. Fits. Once again, I choke mid-sip. Oh, sweet Jesus. Did she seriously just say that? I glance over and she's got one perfect eyebrow arched, awaiting my response. Yep, she said it. You wanna, I cough again.
Oh, relax.
Summer laughs.
It was a joke.
I narrow my eyes at her. A joke. I echo. So you have zero interest in making out with me? Hell, why am I challenging her? My dick twitches against my zipper, a warning that I shouldn't be entertaining the idea of kissing Summer.
I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world if we did,
she says with a wink.
And it's always nice to have someone to kiss at midnight. I was mostly joking, though. I just like making you blush.
I don't blush, I object. because I'm a dude, and dudes don't go around declaring their blushers. Summer hoots.
Yes, you do. You're blushing now.
Oh, really? You can see this supposed blush right through my beard? Huh? I rub my face defiantly.
Uh-huh.
She reaches out and strokes my cheek above the heavy beard growth.
Right here.
I gulp. My dick stirs again. I hate how attracted I am to her.
Fitzy,
she whispers in my ear, and my pulse goes careening.
I think we...
Happy fucking New Year! Saved by Hollis. My friend lurches toward us and plants a sloppy peck on Summer's cheek. They'd just met tonight, but she doesn't seem offended by the kiss, only mildly amused.
You're about 20 minutes too early with that sentiment,
she informs him. And you don't have a drink in your hand. He fixes her with a disapproving glare. Why doesn't she have a drink in her hand? Someone get this beautiful woman a drink.
I'm not a big drinker,
Summer protests. Bullshit, Dean cackles. He's wandered over, his girlfriend Allie Hayes at his side. You were off your face when you burned down the sorority house. You burned down a sorority house? Asks a familiar voice. Dean spins around. Gee, he crows. Just under the wire. Yeah, we almost didn't make it, Garrett Graham says as he strides up to the table. There was a 10-car pileup on the bridge. Sat there for almost an hour before traffic started moving again.
Han Han,
Allie says happily, throwing her arms around Hannah Wells. Hannah is Garrett's girl, but she also happens to be Allie's best friend.
I'm so glad you're here. Me too. Happy New Year's Eve.
Garrett Eve, her boyfriend corrects.
Dude,
Hannah retorts.
Give it up. I'm not calling it that.
Summer snorts.
Garrett Eve?
Dean rolls his eyes at our old team captain. Pompous ass. He glances at Summer. His birthday is New Year's Day. Garrett Day, G says automatically, before turning to greet me and Hollis and the other guys from the team who made the trek to Brooklyn. Summer gets a quick hug and a peck on the cheek. Good to see you, Summertime. You torched a sorority house?
Oh my god, no, I didn't torch anything.
She glowers at her brother. Bro, everyone's staring at you, Hollis suddenly says, grinning at Garrett. Hollis is right. Several heads have turned in our direction. Most of the people here are too hammered to pay much attention to their surroundings, but some of them have recognized Garrett. He's in the middle of one of the most explosive rookie seasons in Bruins history, so I'm not surprised he's attracting attention even outside of Boston. They're probably going to start heckling me soon, he says glumly. We lost to the Islanders last night. Final score was 5-4.
Yeah, but you scored a hat trick,
Hannah counters.
Anyone who heckles a player with a hat trick is a stupid moron.
Can a moron be anything other than stupid? Dean asks with a grin.
Oh, shut it, De Laurentiis, you know what I mean.
When a few more people start looking and pointing at Garrett, Allie teases.
How does it feel to be famous?
You tell me, G jokes back.
Ha, I am so not famous,
says the person with a role on an HBO show. Allie's show is actually based on a book I really enjoyed, and although I'm happy that she's a working actress, I secretly think the book was better. The book is always better.
Stop being so modest.
Summer slings an arm around Allie, who's almost a head shorter than her.
Guys, I saw her sign 4 autographs tonight. She's a star. Only half the season has aired so far,
Allie protests.
We might not even get renewed.
Of course you will, Dean says, as if it's not even up for debate. Summer releases Allie and returns to my side, laying a hand on my arm. It's not a possessive grip by any means, but I don't miss the way both Garrett and Hunter zoom in on it. Dean doesn't notice, thank God, because Allie is dragging him away, saying she wants one more dance before the countdown. Beside me, Hollis examines the room with a surprising degree of intensity for a drunk guy. I gotta decide whose tongue I want in my mouth at midnight, he announces.
Classy,
Summer says. He leers wolfishly. You play your cards right, that tongue could be yours. Her response is to throw her head back and laugh.
Luckily, Hollis has an ego made of Kevlar. He shrugs and wanders off, which spurs most of the other guys to scatter. Pierre, our resident French-Canadian, and Matt Anderson, a junior defenseman, head for the bar. Only Garrett and Hannah remain, and Hunter, who's got a beer in one hand and his phone in the other. He's taking a video of the crowd for his Snapchat story.
How about you?
Summer asks Hunter.
I saw you dancing with 7 different girls tonight. Which one are you going to kiss?
None of them. He lowers the phone, his blue eyes dead serious. I don't do New Year's kisses. Chicks always try to find meaning in them that isn't there. Summer rolls her eyes so hard, I'm surprised she doesn't pull a muscle.
Right, because all women start planning their weddings after one kiss.
She glances at a laughing Hannah.
Wanna hit the ladies? I wanna touch up my makeup before the countdown. My lip gloss needs to be perfect for when I kiss my future husband at midnight.
She directs another eye roll at Hunter. He winks at her, unfazed. Better hurry, Blondie. Only 16 minutes left. He nods at the huge digital clock hanging over the DJ station.
Be right back.
Hannah gives Garrett a kiss and then follows Summer. I need a refill, I tell Garrett. I gesture at his empty hands. And you need a drink. He nods and we leave Hunter at the table and make our way to the bar. We stop at the far end of it where it's quieter, near the arched doorway leading to the restrooms. I order 2 beers and hand over some cash. When I turn back, I find Garrett eyeing me. What? I say awkwardly. What's going on with you in Summer? Nothing. Fuck, did I answer too fast? Liar, you answered way too fast. God damn it. His tone becomes cautious. When she got handsy back there, you didn't seem to mind. He's right. I didn't mind. The last time I saw Summer, I made a conscious effort to keep my distance. Tonight, I let her touch my arm. I shared a drink with her. Honestly, if I liked to dance, I probably would have let her drag me onto the floor. She's into me, I say slowly. Garrett snorts. No shit, dude. That chick wants to ride your dick. I know. Guilt pricks my throat. I hope I haven't been leading her on tonight. Don't worry, I assure him. I won't go there. He looks startled. Why would I be worried? His eyebrows furrow. Wait, you might be misunderstanding. I'm not warning you away from her. I think this is a good thing. A frown touches my lips. You do?
Of course, I mean, one, you never hook up.
I swallow a laugh. That's not true at all. I get lots of action. I just don't talk about it. 2, Summer's cute. She's fun. Easy to talk to. He shrugs. She could be exactly what you need. You'd have to run it by Dean first, though. He thinks she's a brat, but he's protective of her. Run it by Dean, as in ask Dean for permission to bone down with his little sister? Garrett is frickin' crazy if my thought process halts. You're talking about more than a casual hookup here, I say. Well, yeah, she's Dean's sister. He'd kill you otherwise. I'm not dating her, G.
Why not?
He reaches forward to grab our beers, passing one my way. I twist off the top and take a deep gulp before answering. Because she's not my type. We've got nothing in common. She likes hockey, he points out. That's a start. And I think it might end there, I say dryly. I design and review video games. I'm into art. I'm covered in ink and I binge-watch crime shows on Netflix and she's... I don't even know. I scan my brain. She's obsessed with shoes, according to Dean, and he insists she has a shopping problem. Okay, so she's into fashion. Some people consider that art. I snicker. You're reaching. And you're judging. She seems like a good girl, Fitz. Dude, she got kicked out of Brown for partying too hard. She's a party girl. She's in a sorority. I'm on a roll now because my dick is still semi-hard and I'm desperately grasping for reasons to not screw Summer. She's fluff, I finish. Fluff. Yeah, fluff. I shrug helplessly. You know, not serious about anything. She's surface level. Garrett pauses for a long moment, searching my face. He stares for so long that I fidget with the sleeve of my hoodie, feeling like a specimen under his microscope. I hate that intrusive sensation of eyes boring into me. It's a scar left over from childhood, a need to blend into the background, to be unseen. I'm 2 seconds from telling him to cut it out when he starts to laugh. Oh, I get it. I was wasting my time trying to sell you on her. You were already sold. His gray eyes light up gleefully. You have a thing for Dean's sister. Nah, I say, but it's a half-hearted denial at best. Really? Because it sounds like you're trying to convince yourself that she's not right for you. He grins. Is it working? I sigh in defeat. Kind of. I mean, I've managed to keep my hands off her all night. That gets me a laugh. Look, Colin. Can I call you Colin? His jaw drops. I just fucking realized I've never called you Colin. Garrett literally shocks himself into silence until I let out a growl of impatience. Sorry, he says. That just blew my mind. Anyway, Fitzy. On paper, Wellesley and I don't seem like we'd work, right? But we do, don't we? He has a point. When I first saw them together, I couldn't make sense of it. Hannah was an artsy music major. Garrett was a smart-ass jock. They're opposites in so many ways, and yet they really do click as a couple. But Summer and I, we're not even on the same piece of paper. From what I've seen and what Dean has told me, she's drama llama at full force, all the time. She craves the spotlight. I shy away from it. It's bad enough that our games are televised every Friday night on the local New England network, and the major games make it to ESPN. Makes me cringe to think of strangers watching me skate and shoot and brawl on some huge screen. All I'm saying is, keep an open mind. Don't fight it. He claps me on the shoulder. Just let it happen. Let it happen. And fuck, it absolutely could happen. All I'd have to do is smile in Summer's direction and she'd be in my arms. She's been sending out interested vibes left and right, but I think what it boils down to is that she's out of my league. I play hockey. I'm fairly intelligent. I'm good-looking if we go by my success in the chick department. But at the end of the day, I'm that nerdy kid who would hole up in his bedroom playing video games, trying to pretend his parents weren't fighting like cats and dogs. In high school, I had a brief moment where I tried expanding my horizons. I started hanging with a nihilistic crew who got a charge out of rebelling against any cause. But that came to an abrupt end when they got into a brawl with some kids from a neighboring school, and half the group was arrested for assault. I quickly reverted back to my loner state after that. Not just to save my place on the hockey team, but to keep from giving my parents new fighting ammunition. I listened to them scream at each other for 2 hours about which one was to blame for me running with a bad crowd. It was easier just being a loner. Needless to say, I didn't have girls like Summer throwing themselves at me, and I didn't party with my teammates after hockey games, so not even the puck bunnies wasted their energy on me. In college, I've made more of an effort to be social, but deep down, I'm still the guy who wants to remain invisible. Summer is the most visible person I've ever met. But Garrett's right. I'm being a judgmental bastard. She might come off as a bit spoiled and superficial at times, but she deserves a chance. Everyone does. Hannah's already back at the table when Garrett and I return.
Cutting it close,
she scolds, pointing at the big clock. It's 2 minutes to midnight. I frown because Summer's not with her. Damn it, where is she? I've decided to take G's advice and stop fighting it. I'm going to give in, kiss the hell out of her when the clock strikes midnight, and see where it goes from there. 1 minute to go, boys and girls! The DJ's voice thunders. I give the room a visual sweep. Summer's still nowhere to be found. I want to ask Hannah where she is, but Hannah's got her arms looped around G's neck, and they only have eyes for each other.
30 seconds,
shouts the DJ. All around me, people are coupling up or gathering with their group of friends. Allie and Dean are already making out. Hollis has reunited with the brunette he was dancing with earlier. Still no Summer.
10!
Everyone yells. The red numerals on the clock tick down in time with the crowd's screams.
9!
Each passing second brings another jolt of disappointment.
8! 7!
And then I spot her, or at least I think it's her. The strobe lights are going off now, zigzagging over the sea of bodies crammed in the bar. Each burst of light helps me form a clearer picture of the girl against the wall.
6! 5!
White dress, red ballet flats, the ponytail.
4!
3!
It's definitely summer.
2!
But she's not alone.
1!
I wrench my gaze away the moment Hunter's mouth hungrily collides with Summer's perfect lips.
Happy New Year!
4. Fitz. I wake up the next morning without a hangover. That's what happens when you only drink 3 beers and are back in your hotel room before 1 a.m. on New Year's Eve. Aren't I the poster boy for good behavior? My phone informs me of a dozen messages and missed calls. Dragging a hand through my messy hair, I roll onto my back and sift through the notifications. My parents each texted at precisely 12 a.m. I can just imagine them sitting in their respective houses at 11:59, hands hovering over their phones like they're preparing to slap the buzzer on Family Feud, each one desperate to be the first to get a message through. They're so frickin' competitive. Mom.
Happy New Year, sweetie. Love you so, so, so much. This is going to be the best year ever. Your year. Woot woot.
Oh, dear God. Mothers are not allowed to say woot woot. My dad's text isn't much better. Dad. Happy New Year. We got this. We got this. Got what? Parents trying to sound cool is a whole other level of secondhand embarrassment. My friends' messages are more entertaining. Hollis.
Where the fuck are you? Patty's just getting started.
Hollis.
Patty.
Hollis. Parting. Hollis.
Party! Fuck this phone.
Garrett. Happy New Year. Where'd you run off to, Colin? Still feel weird calling you that. My old teammates Logan and Tucker send their New Year messages to our various group chats. Tuck and Sabrina include a picture of their baby, which prompts about a million heart-eye emojis from our friends. Pierre texts something in French. My teammates blow up our team thread with well wishes and random videos, grainy and impossible to hear, of the various parties they attended. One teammate's name is noticeably missing from the group chat and my phone in general. Shocking. No word from Hunter. I bet he was too busy to text anyone last night. Busy, busy, busy. I ignore the sharp clenching in my chest and force all thoughts of Hunter and his busy, busy night out of my head. I continue scrolling through my phone. A girl I knew in high school sends a generic note. For some reason, she still has me in her contacts list, so anytime a holiday rolls around, I get a message from her. Hollis sends a few more texts that make me chuckle. Hollis. Yo, bar's closing. Where you at? Assuming getting a BJ or something? Hollis. After Patty at Danny's house. New buddy. You'll love him. Hollis. Okay, then. Hollis.
Gonna assume you dead.
Hollis.
Hope you're not dead, though. I love you, bro. New year, new us. Word.
Oh, man. Someone needs to confiscate that dude's phone when he's wasted. Still laughing, I click on the next message in my inbox. It's from Dean. My humor fades the moment I read it. Dean. Happy New Year. Was hoping to talk to you before you took off. I need a huge favor, bro. Dean. Are you guys still looking for a fourth roommate?
5. Summer. 2 weeks later. The assistant dean is putting on a fake British accent. I've been sitting in his office for about 7 minutes now, and I'm convinced of it. I want to grill him about where he grew up. But I don't think Mr. Richmond would appreciate the interruption. He's clearly receiving way too much enjoyment from this lecture. Academic probation. He's droning. His voice has a weird, raspy croak to it. Like if a frog could talk, that's how I imagine it would sound. A nickname forms in my head. Asshole Frog.
Zero tolerance policy. Given the nature of your previous expulsion.
Or maybe Froghole. That has a better ring to it.
Summer.
He pronounces my name Summer.
I try to remember how Gavin used to say it. Gavin is the sexy dude I dated last year when I spent the summer in England. I don't think their accents are comparable, though. Gavin's blood runs blue, so he'd have that upper-crust accent only those in line to the throne have. Granted, there are about 40 members of the royal family ahead of him in the line of succession, but that's still a whole other stratosphere above Mr. Richmond. Briar's assistant dean is no duke, and his first name is Hal, which doesn't sound very British, unless it's short for something. Hallam? Halbert? Ms. De Laurentiis! My head snaps up. Froghole's expression is as sharp as his tone. I'd zoned him out, and he knows it.
I understand that rules of conduct and academic policies aren't the most exciting subject matter, but you, of all people, should be paying attention to this. The remainder of your college career could depend on it.
I'm sorry, I force myself to say. I don't mean to be rude or ignore you on purpose. I have, attention problems. He nods, eyes on my file.
ADHD, according to this. Are you on medication for it?
I bristle. I'm not, but that's none of his friggin' business. Right? I make a mental note to ask my parents, who are both lawyers, but I'm fairly certain a student doesn't have to disclose to the school the medications they're on. I brush past the question in a way that would make my father proud. I'm sure your file also mentions my writing issues. The distraction works. Froghole glances back at the file, shuffling a few pages.
Difficulties with written expression, yes. That tends to be a symptom of ADHD. Your advisor at Brown recommended alternate assessment methods for you if possible. Extra time on tests, extra tutoring, and oral exams to reduce the amount of writing. Are all written assignments a problem for you, or just longer essays?
Most written work is an issue. My cheeks are on fire. It's so freaking embarrassing sitting here talking about how stupid I am. You're not stupid, Summer. You just learn differently. Mom's voice floats through my head, reciting the same encouraging words I've been hearing my whole life. But although I love my parents dearly, their support doesn't make it any less humiliating that I can't organize my thoughts on paper. Hell, I can barely hold on to those thoughts for 5 seconds before my mind wanders somewhere else. Other people have learning disabilities, I know that. But when your parents and two older brothers all got into Harvard Law, and you're the fashion major who has trouble writing one measly paragraph, it's a little hard not to feel less than.
We'll try to offer the same academic assistance you received at Brown, but not all your professors will be able to accommodate you.
Froghole flips to another paper.
Let's take a look at your schedule. I suspect you'll only have to worry about written assignments in history of fashion and fundamentals of color and design. The rest of your courses seem to be more hands-on.
I'm unable to hide my relief. Along with the two classes he just named, I'm also taking textiles, which I'm excited about. Sewing and tailoring, not as excited for, and an independent study that requires I design a line and debut it at the end of semester fashion show. All three are almost entirely practical. I fulfilled most of my degree requirements during my first 2 years at Brown. The awful ones like lit and sociology and gender studies. That's probably why I was always on academic probation there. I barely passed any of those.
But as I mentioned before, there are no strikes here. No second chances. If you cause any trouble, if you can't meet the minimum academic requirements and maintain your GPA, you will be expelled. Are we clear?
Crystal, I mutter.
Brilliant.
Ugh, that accent is fake. I'm certain of it. Hey, Mr. Richmond, if you don't mind my asking, where exactly in the UK are you from? You kinda sound like my friend Marcus, who's from... He interrupts with,
Your attention issues are quite concerning, Summer. You never did say if you were on medication.
Oh, fuck off. We have a stare-off that lasts a couple of seconds. I clench my teeth and ask, may I go now?
One last thing,
he says, a snide edge to his voice. I force myself to stay seated.
I'm sure you've noticed that your schedule doesn't list the name of your advisor.
I hadn't noticed, actually, but sure enough, there's a blank space after the academic advisor line.
That's because I will be looking after you personally.
A rush of anxiety courses through me. What? Is that even legal? Well, I'm sure it's legal, but why would the assistant dean serve as the advisor for a fashion major?
It's not a role I would normally take on. However, given the circumstances under which you were admitted to this university...
Circumstances? I cut in confused. His dark eyes gleam with, I think that might be spite.
I understand that your father and the dean are longtime friends and golf chums.
Definitely spite.
And I'm quite aware of the numerous donations your family has made to this school. With that said, I'm not a supporter of the I'll pat your back, you pat mine mentality. I believe that admission to this college, to any college, should be granted based on a student's merit. So, he shrugs, I feel it would be prudent to keep an eye on you academically and ensure you're conducting yourself according to the rules and policies we just went over.
I'm sure my cheeks are redder than tomatoes, and I hope my $200 foundation is doing its job. It is absolutely mortifying knowing my father had to call in a favor with Dean Prescott to get me into Briar after the Brown fiasco. If it were up to me, I'd be done with college for good, but I promised my parents I'd get a degree. And I hate disappointing them.
We'll meet once a week, so I can evaluate your progress and guide you academically.
Sounds great, I lie. This time I get to my feet without asking permission. I have to run now, Mr. Richmond. Why don't you email me our meeting times and I'll add those days to my calendar? Thanks so much for all your guidance. I'm sure he didn't miss the sarcastic note in that last word, guidance. But I don't give him a chance to respond. I'm already out the door and waving goodbye to his secretary. Outside, I inhale the chilled air. Normally, I adore the winter, and my new campus looks particularly magical covered with a layer of white frost. But I'm too stressed out to enjoy it right now. I can't believe I'm being forced to have regular contact with Richmond. He was such a jerk. I take another breath, adjust the strap of my Chanel tote, and start walking toward the parking lot behind the administration building. It's a beautiful brick building, ivy-covered and incredibly old, like pretty much everything else on campus. Briar is one of the oldest and most prestigious universities in the country. It's produced a couple of presidents and a ton of politicians, which is impressive. But only in the last decade have they begun to offer cooler, less academic courses, like this fashion design program that's going to give me a Bachelor of Fine Arts. Despite what some people might think, fashion isn't fluff. I'm not fluff. So take that, Colin Fitzgerald. Bitterness rises in my throat, but I gulp it down because I'm not a bitter person. I have a temper, yes, but my anger usually comes out in a fiery burst and then dissolves almost instantly. I don't stay mad at people for long. Who needs that kind of negative energy in their life? And I certainly don't hold grudges. Yet it's been 2 weeks since New Year's Eve, and I still can't let it go. The stupid, thoughtless, mean-spirited comments I overheard at the bar refused to leave my mind. He called me fluff. He thinks I'm surface level. Forget him. He's not worth the mental anguish. Right. So what if Fitz thinks I'm superficial? He's not the first to think that, and he won't be the last. When you're a rich girl from Connecticut, people tend to assume you're a materialistic bitch. says the materialistic bitch with the silver